notes.
I've worn like two shirts twice.
How many jerseys, different jerseys, has
they've all
Justin
been different.
Worn?
They've all been different.
That's have they?
Lie. Yep.
I thought I you wore the that. Same Sounders one a couple times.
I don't think so.
Also, is this also China Walmart?
Nope, this one's actually.
I was going to say, that one looks real. A little bit better.
Yeah, this one's real. This is a real Griffey.
I don't know worn. How much more organic content you think you're going to get out of us, but I would start rolling in pretty fucking soon.
Andrew, why did you have to say that?
We have been rolling.
Perfect. Let's do it.
Andrew, let's cut that part out and just fold it in.
No. That was fine until Andrew broke the fourth wall.
I just
we're pro Deadpool up here.
Yeah, we are very pro Deadpool, pro Rick and Morty. Yeah. Very pro Rick and Morty.
Pod. Broke the fourth wall,
dude. I'm just gonna start rolling it in, dude.
He's gonna start rolling it. Well, yep. I could find something else to talk
I'm
about.
I'm coming to you in five.
Dame time. What's
four,
up? No, Thursday
Zach,
morning.
It's the whole
three,
Zach Collins thing also upsets me.
Two.
Also, was this today's paper, Vinny?
And one. It was today's paper.
Welcome back to the locker room. This is our 11th show. They don't believe me, but I'm pretty confident it is. I am your host, Justin Reed. This is Andrew Tenney.
What's up?
The locker room, as always, continues to be your only consistent sports talk show in the Spokane market. We're not as big as Dennis Patchen and Rich Lukens, but...
I don't even know who they are.
That's all right. We'll just move on from there. So we have some breaking-ish news from yesterday. This is August 20th. We're going to have a great show today. August 19th, what happened? Gonzaga and Baylor agreed to play a game this season. Nobody knows when. Nobody knows what's going on.
If they're actually going to be able to play it.
So that will be the next news to decide. But Gonzaga and Baylor, who are considered to be one of the top three teams in the college basketball season this upcoming year, have decided to schedule a game that's not actually scheduled. But this will be an awesome game, I think. GU Baylor last played in 2019 when the Zags beat the Baylor, the Sweet 16. I think it was the Sweet 16 because then they lost to Texas Tech after. But this will be a really fun game. Zags, Baylor have a lot of connections. One of their assistants was a former Zag assistant, John Jakus, I want to say is the pronunciation. Jakus is the pronunciation. And then former Zag, Rem Bakamas, also was a graduate assistant last year and the year before. So I think that's exciting. GU has continued to show that they'll play anybody, anywhere, no matter the time.
Yeah, consistently year in and year out, their out-of-conference or their pre-conference schedule is always really impressive. And they typically do really well, too. They might drop a game or two like they have, but when they beat Duke and Zion, was that at the Hawaiian Invitational?
Yeah, that was the Maui Classic. The Maui Gym Maui Invitational.
Yeah. No, they're really impressive, and you can't – I mean, they have to because they end up playing in the WCC, and that's where the majority of their season lies. And so they need those early season wins against the big schools.
Yeah, and what's really unfortunate, too, is you get these fans of college basketball who are like, oh, yeah, I know college basketball. I'm going to go on Twitter. I'm going to go on Facebook and talk about college basketball. And they get on and say, the Zags don't play anybody when the Zags consistently play top 10 teams every single year, like clockwork, and whether that's a Thanksgiving tournament or it's a game like Baylor or even last year when they played North Carolina in the Kennel. So I think the idea that the Zags don't play anybody is ridiculous. It's also very – fans just don't know what they're talking about because the Zags can't play in any other conference other than the WCC. They have no football team, which really hurts. They can't play in the Pac-12 without a football team. They barely could play in the Mountain West when they're thinking about going to the Mountain West football team. So, you know, they're doing – is the best that they can with the hand that they were dealt. They've been in the WCC forever, essentially. Before that, they played in, like, the Big West or whatever it was called years ago.
I think they're doing more than the best that they can, too. I mean, I don't think you can really have any qualms with these schedules that they put out year in, year out before they start their conference games.
And nobody wants to go to the Kennel and play the Zags because they're so good at home, and why go up there and, you know, possibly lose?
Jeopardize your early season.
Exactly. So, I mean, I get it, but it's also unfortunate. So, we'll move on to a different topic. This has also happened yesterday.
This is just 2020.
Bizarre. This is just absolutely bizarre. So the Reds play-by-play, Tom Brenneman, whose father, Marty Brenneman, also was the play-by-play for the Cincinnati Reds for years, had quite an interesting day. They had a doubleheader yesterday, and he goes on air like normal, and then they cut away for an inning. And on the process of coming back out of commercial break, he gets caught using a gay slur, and then, like, continues to go on with his day, and nobody knew about it until like midway through the next game. And they're like, by the way, this happened, and this is what happened after that, when he goes on back on air for the top of the fifth inning.
Castellanos to lead things off. Jim Day's going to be taking us the rest of the way through this game as Holland takes over on the mound. I made a comment earlier tonight that went out over the air that I am deeply ashamed of. If I have hurt anyone out there, I can't tell you how much I say from the bottom of my heart, I'm so very, very sorry. I pride myself and think of myself as a man of faith. As there's a drive in a deep left field by Castellanos, it will be a home run. And so that'll make it a 4-0 ball game. I don't know if I'm going to be putting on this headset again. I don't know if it's going to be for the Reds. I don't know if it's going to be for my bosses at Fox. I want to apologize for the people who signed my paycheck, for the Reds, for Fox Sports Ohio, for the people I work with.
That was probably one of the most, like you said, bizarre, just ridiculous things to ever happen. It's not just the apology, because the apology was sort of expected. That's what mm-hmm. what happens. What really just is mind-boggling is, and all actually impressive, let's be honest, it's actually impressive. He breaks away from apologizing for something that's going to ruin his career to continue to do his career.
He's that committed.
He's that committed. And this is a guy who I remember he was the announcer for MLB All-Star Baseball 2005, Jeter on the cover. And I mean, I've known Tom Brennan's voice forever. And this, I don't know how many people in the industry could just break, I don't want to say character, but can break off of something that actually important and that monumental to his life and just act like it's completely normal. Like Nick Castellanos drives a ball deep left field, Reds up 5-0, we out, you know, in the ball game. And it's like, whew.
It was a true display of his professionalism after absolutely dropping the ball in the first game of the doubleheader, in which probably, not even jeopardized, probably ruined his career.
Probably.
I would be surprised if he was back in the booth for the Reds anytime soon.
So the Reds have already suspended him indefinitely.
Nice.
The Fox was reached out because he works for Fox Sports. That was the Fox affiliate for the Reds. But the Reds said, no thanks for now. we're gonna pass. So Fox was reached out for comment. Fox hasn't said anything yet because Brenneman does Fox football as well. I think he does college football. I don't think he does the NFL. He's a big-time name. I mean, his dad has a long-storied history. Tom Brenneman has a long-storied history. So this was big news for the announcer's world. And it was just super odd because I saw something on Twitter like Tom Brenneman is so 2020. I'm like, what? This guy's mm-hmm. old. He's an old school announcer. And I started digging. I'm like, oh. And then I saw that video and I'm like, that's borderline comical.
It was. I pissed myself watching it the first time. I was howling. And what you were mentioning, okay, so when we actually listened to the clip where he used the racial slur and then takes about 2 seconds because the mic was hot without him realizing it, and then just starts the game up. And doesn't he mention the sponsor right after it? And the sponsors are probably like, what the hell, man?
we'll give him a shout-out. St. Ray's Roofing must be in Cincinnati. They're probably sitting there watching the game like, oh, here's our spot. Like all their families around, they're like, we got to watch this. We paid big bucks for this spot. Are you guys ready for it? Capital of the world. And they're just like, and then he's like, and we're back. Cincinnati baseball sponsored by St. Ray's Roofing. And then everyone at St. Ray's is just like, what do you do?
It's so tough.
Are they going to get their money back? Are they going to be able to, are they ever going to, like, maybe they'll go sponsor some other team. But yeah, that was pretty unfortunate. Like you said, it was fairly comical. Outside of what happened, it was a pretty good time to watch.
It was a pretty good time to watch this guy just flame out and just burn.
His career was literally like falling apart in front of our eyes and our ears.
And his face too, while the camera's on and while he's issuing his apology, is just so raw. You can see he's just so defeated, tail between his legs, but still just carrying on like a true professional.
Like a true professional. That's right. So
thanks for the entertainment.
Thanks for the Tom entertainment,
Brenneman.
Tom
we'll
Brenneman.
See you never again.
Yeah. We'll see you in another life.
Yeah.
So sticking in the baseball theme, we also had an interesting thing happen over the weekend, or actually earlier this week.
A couple times.
I mean, it's just been a mess to with baseball.
Degrees.
And baseball wants and needs to be fun.
Does it want to be fun, though? I feel like it has this existential battle with itself, and every time it takes two steps forward, it takes three steps back. I don't know if baseball actually wants baseball to be fun or not.
Make baseball fun again, I think, needs to be the new – I think, you know, the NFL nickname is the No Fun League, but I think MLB actually stands for the major losers.
They take themselves way too seriously, and it's like really nobody cares. Nobody's watching the games except for all these old white men that are, you know, north of 55. Are you not old and white and north of 55?
No.
Okay, well, you are one of the few then. But
I'm white, I guess, and I'm a man, so I guess that's something.
Anyway, so why don't you tell them what's transpired earlier this week?
Yeah, the big thing that happened, Fernando Tatis Jr., I think he's a junior.
Yep, he's a junior.
He's a 21-year-old stud. He leads the league in homers. I think he has 12 or 13 up to this point. Mm-hmm. He is a player for the Padres. And on Monday night, they were playing the Rangers at Globe Life Field. And they were up 10-3, mm-hmm. and it was, the eighth? I think it was bases loaded. In the eighth inning, Tatis comes to the plate. 3-0 count against Juan Nicasio, former Mariner. He sucks. 3-0 count. Conventional wisdom says in the unwritten rules of baseball, you take that 3-0 pitch.
Regardless of the score,
Regardless of the score, just because of the fact it's bases loaded, there's no – Mike Trout might get – the green light here because he's Mike Trout. But even the manager relayed the signs out to the third base coach the first base coach who then relayed the signs to Tatis saying, take this pitch. He didn't, and he smokes a grand slam and just torches ball. That didn't go over
this
too
is well. In the air to right field. Back it goes. Fernando has done it again. Fernando Tatis Jr.
And as I'm sitting there watching the apology, I'm like, why are you apologizing for this, man? Like, don't feed into the masses. Like, be okay. Own it.
Tom Brennan, unbelievable.
Slur. And now we're hearing
Tatis has just hit a grand slam, his second home run of the night, and the Padres have a 14-3 lead. We are watching is nothing short of amazing.
Come on, this is fun. This is fun.
Exactly. You know those few people that do watch baseball out there? You know what they like? Dingers. You know what they like? Grand slams. You know what they don't care about? What the score is and what the greater context is in the game and how they should be playing based on these unwritten rules that seem so inconsistent with the essence of the sport at times.
The Padres manager actually said it's a learning opportunity. He'll grow from it.
It just throws him under the bus for just being a young, fun player and actually providing a spark to the game that needs it so desperately.
The Padres have been such trash for the last 20 years, and they actually have a decent ball player here who's fun and exciting and who will put fans in the seats when we're allowed to actually put fans in the seats. And like you said, you are absolutely throwing him under the bus for something that was incredible and impressive. And, it's really annoying. But essentially, I have some unwritten rules here for you.
Yeah, let's go over some of these.
That are pretty exciting that I haven't told you yet, so we're just going to get your raw reaction.
Okay.
Big baseball fan. So this one, which has been ingrained in baseball forever, the leadoff hitter must be a base stealer and the designated hitter must be a power hitter.
Okay.
The run with that one is completely going away because you look at the team like the Astros. They have a guy like George Springer being a leadoff hitter. Mm-hmm. He's not a base stealer. He's a power guy. And then you look at the designated hitter position. Ben Zobrist, not a power guy, a contact guy who has been used as a designated hitter and utility guy throughout his career, essentially. So that one, to me, should be on its way out because I don't think there should be any reason as to why.
Yeah, but that's not one of the ones that people get upset about and that lead to, in-game brawls between squads.
No, it's not, thankfully, because that one would be very interesting. The other one that's just odd, never give an intentional walk if first base is occupied. And it's like, let's say there's two outs, and you're up by three, right?
Okay.
And you're playing the Angels, and Mike Trout is up to the plate with a guy on first. I'm putting Mike Trout on first base. I don't even care. I don't even care who's after him. I think I don't think that rule puts my team in the best position to win every single time. Now, am I putting the tying runner on base? Maybe not, but I think that one also is dumb. This one I really like. This one has also led to some issues this year and led to our favorite guy, Joe Kelly. If one of your players gets knocked down by a pitch, retaliate. That is literally an unwritten rule in baseball. And you get the commissioner, you get other managers, you get other players like, you can't throw at other guys. And it's like, what else are you supposed to do? You can't go out and just plow a guy like you can in football.
This is probably a wildly unpopular opinion, but I like when people get decked in baseball. I think it's so it's entertaining just because the game is so dry, and if you know people aren't lighting up the scoreboard, and it's just not a batter free for all. It's like, yeah, give me some excitement. I want to see people get up on the edge of their seats on the bench.
Yeah, brush them off the plate a bit.
Yeah, I want the stare down to the pitcher's mound. I want that, you know, hesitation, maybe that pump fake, deciding whether they're going to charge the mound
type
or not.
Stuff that happens. Yeah. You get beaned in slugfest and your guy, like, threatens to come out, something like that.
And I want to see who can actually land punches.
You know, right? Baseball players.
Who was it? Jose Bautista, who just got clubbed by...
Oh, yeah, just absolutely destroyed him. Former Spokane Indian, by the way.
Where's Ian Kinsler at?
He might be retired. He was with the Tigers.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
I think he retired, which is unfortunate. He was a good guy, good player. I hated playing against him because he always was way too good against the Mariners.
You know what I learned last night watching baseball? One, that Evan Longoria is still in the league, still in the bigs. Two, that he plays for the Giants.
I did know that, actually.
And that was new information, and now I feel up to date on all the happenings in the world of MLB.
I just remember when Longoria tore his groin against the Mariners, ended his career, his season. So that one was unfortunate. So this other one that directly affected the Mariners is don't steal bases, swing at 3-0 pitches, which is what we talked about, or otherwise run up the score when ahead by a large margin. So this one, it directly ties into Tatis's situation.
I think that's so stupid to not try to run up the score, though, because you see so many times it's not an infrequent thing that teams can absolutely just explode in an inning and go for 6 to 8 runs. So why would you not secure the lead when you can? If you have the bases loaded, it's right there for you. Why would you not try to capitalize on it? I don't understand that at all.
It's the exact same thing. The Seahawks had this thing happen multiple times back in their heyday, 2013-2014 season, when they beat the Cardinals by, I think, 58-0.
Oh, that was in 2012. They went up to Buffalo.
And did the exact same thing. People are like, why are you running up the score on these teams? And it's like, we're professional athletes getting paid millions of dollars to play a game. I want them to score as many points as possible. I want to see Madden numbers up on that scoreboard every single time. So this one ties back to the Mariners, actually. So in 2001, Cleveland actually trailed Seattle by 12 runs in the 7th inning, and then by 9 runs going into the 8th. The Mariners lost that game.
See? See? I think there are enough counterexamples out there, such as you just mentioned, that would say, hey, maybe this rule – like, you're a professional. If you're getting your ass beat that bad in a game, that's on you. Why put that on the team who's actually playing well and winning and try to make them feel guilty or obliged to this obscene rule?
Yep.
I just – baseball.
And then these ones all tying together, and we talked about this one before the show. Don't admire home runs, bat flips – and actually, let's keep those together real quick. Yeah. That, again, it's the exact same thing. It's like, that's excitement. Like, I want to see a guy throw a bat into the stands. I just want to see him just chuck a bat and just, I don't want to see him hit anybody. I want to see someone just like
snap. Well, you know, if they happen to be, you know, at the end of the bat.
It says it on your ticket, and it says, be aware of flying objects. And then people still sue. And it's
I got hit by a ball when I went to the Mariners and Blue Jays game back when Frank Thomas was still on the Blue Jays. I got hit by a foul ball, and someone retrieved it for me, and I got to keep it.
Hey.
And I think Matt Stairs hit me, and so one of the people in front of me gave me a Canadian flag, and they're like, hey, the guy that hit you is Canadian, and I'm like sitting there. My blood, whatchamacallit, had popped, and so my finger is now purple. And my blood vessel, that's what it is.
There you go.
And I was like, I don't want your Canadian flag. Like, this guy just ruined my pinky.
Yeah, you're like, Canada sucks.
I didn't even get it that badly, though, because after it deflected off my pinky, it hit the guy behind me right in the face.
That's
but awful. I was a kid, so everyone was like, oh, poor kid.
Poor kid. The last one here is, can you bunt to break up a no-hitter?
I love it. I love the thought of it because that's like the ultimate disrespect.
Let's say you are the guy. It's bottom of the ninth. There's two.
I'm the pitcher. I'm the hitter.
You're the hitter.
Okay.
You're the hitter, and you bunt for a base hit. What are you doing? What are your reactions? Like, you get to first base. Are you celebrating? Like, what do you do when you get to first base?
I don't think I do anything because it's all mental. He knows just as well as I know. Yeah. If anything, it's just a stare down, or you just act nonchalantly as if nothing happened. You know, you're not aware of absolutely just ruining this guy's life and the fact that he might never not ever throw a no-hitter or a perfect game again.
I was going to say.
I think that is just the ultimate flex.
So no-hitters happen fairly often. Yeah, let's say it's a perfect game and okay. You're just standing there. You're just staring right at him and you're like, you know what I just did. Like, mm-hmm. you know I'm better than you. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, I don't think you should, but the thought of it. See, it has happened, though. It has happened.
Then
it's
you're
still
planting
part of the game,
seeds
though.
For rivalries yeah, exactly. and bad blood that just make all the games that follow after between the two squads all that much more interesting. And I'm saying anything that baseball can do, even if it isn't exactly looked upon well by the public or the viewing public anyway, I think they need it. And I think they should take advantage of it.
I definitely am more of a traditionalist when it comes to sports in terms of, you know, I hated when the NFL took the kickoff away.
Yeah.
But I like how the extra points were moved back. I think baseball putting a runner on second extra innings, I actually don't like that. It is exciting. It is fun.
At least they won't have that in the playoffs.
That
seems just to be an experimental thing for an already experimental season.
100% fine. I like that the DH is gone completely. I think that's good. I think there's rules that are made that are good for sports, but I think there are some rules that are bad for sports that make it less fun. So let's make baseball fun. Let's bunt to break up perfect games.
Yep.
Let's flex on pitchers. Let's throw bats. Let's win games by 25 plus runs every other week, and I think that makes baseball fun again.
And let's when the fans come back to the stands, if they ever do, let's put them on notice. Be like, hey, you have to start paying attention because you might get a bat in the face.
Let's just throw baseballs. Like, you know how how players, it's nice, you know, they'll toss the ball to the fans. I want to see them just throw a 95 mile an hour fastball.
Trevor Bauer it out of frustration.
I think that would be awesome. So let's. NBA talk.
That was talking baseball.
NBA, we like baseball. NBA is in full swing, and this is a sport that is absolutely nailing their bubble and their fun because it has been just nonstop action, nonstop success in terms of their season so far, the second half of their season so far. So let's talk about some of these series is where they're at right now. Half of the league has played two games in their playoffs. The other half play tonight. What's going on so far?
Well, first of all, before we get into the actual like nitty-gritty of what's going on in these respective series, I just want to hear from you as a fan what your takeaways have been after the first 3 days of the playoffs.
So I'm not the biggest NBA fan since the Sonics were taken, just from my little small grasp when I was like 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so the NBA has always been a sport that's been really tough for me to grasp onto. I've always liked college way better, and I still like college way better, but the NBA has grown on me, and I think some of that has to do with the fact that there's Zags in the league, and so I've been able to watch some of those games. But the quality of play that they put out in terms of pure athleticism and just pure scoring ability has really just been mind-boggling and impressive. Mm-hmm. Now, I think the defense is still garbage. I think some players are still divas, prima donnas. I hate when LeBron expects a foul to be called all the time.
Yeah.
I think a guy like James Harden who draws fouls, I think that's fine. It's up to you as a defender to adjust. But the NBA has been really fun. These 3 days, I mean, I've tuned in. I've been doing other stuff around the house, but I'll have the games on my laptop while I'm doing something on my TV. Mm-hmm. Watching the Mariners, I'll have the NBA on my laptop or vice versa. And it's been a lot of fun. It's been cool to see the top of the league who, at this point, we've never seen athletes and scorers at this level all over the board.
It's
true. You go from team to team, and each one has a guy who can score.
The talent depth in the league right now is maybe the best it's been since, I don't know, maybe the 90s, 80s.
That's the only other time period where that could be an argument. I mean, the amount of talent from each team all the way across the board. Like, you can play as any team on 2K and not feel like you're going to waste your time.
Right, even if their record, I mean, as they actually play in real life, is not good. Like, if you chose a team like the Suns, like, they have a lot of young, raw talent, as you saw actually come to fruition as they were in the bubble, the only team to go 8-0, even though they weren't exactly a great team all year. But like you were mentioning, there's talent everywhere, even on some of the worst and most abysmal and just boring
like
to
Golden
watch
State
teams.
Like Golden State has nobody because they some were hurt. And
it's
going
to be interesting
left.
To but see them come back next year and compete.
They're
going to
they might get the first overall pick. They might get the first lottery pick,
which is really not going to matter this year because
the
draft
be so
is not exactly great. If you're trying to pick up a good role player, I think there are guys in the draft, but getting like a franchise altering player, you're not going
to
get that.
You just have to get
LaMelo is certainly not going to be that. No,
really?
Odds are.
Yeah.
But, okay, anyway, let's, yeah, kind of take a look at where things stand right now. As you mentioned, the teams that played on Tuesday their first game are going to have their second games tonight. Mm-hmm. One interesting series that didn't seem very interesting going into it is the Jazz and the Nuggets. So they sit at one game apiece. The first game went into overtime, which was a surprise because everybody kind of thought that the Nuggets were just kind of going to cruise into this. They have a lot of depth. Michael Porter Jr. has really found his stride offensively in the bubble, and that's kind of continued. He's a liability on defense, but he's kind of forced Mike Malone's hand just because of his offensive capability into playing him more minutes. Also, they're still dealing with a couple of injuries, but they have a bench. The Utah Jazz do not. At all. And they're not playing with Mike Conley either. He left the bubble for, I believe, the birth of his son.
Bad loss for them,
He will be coming back at some point if they are still playing. But the Jazz were able to push that game to overtime. Mitchell, who is just incredible, and he's in the first 3 years of his career, has shown up in the playoffs. And he went for 57, 9-7. So did literally everything in his possibility to try to get them a win. But the Nuggets outlasted them. But the Jazz just beat the brakes off them last night to tie the series 1-1. The Jazz do not have a bench. They have Jordan Clarkson, who comes off. He's kind of spotty, hit or miss. He can get 20. He can also get you like 8. You don't really know what you're getting. They have nobody. All they have is their starters. And I don't know. The fact that that game is 1-1, I mean, I was skeptical about the Nuggets. Not a big subscriber to the Nuggets, but even less so after just this start, because they could easily be down two games to a very undermanned Jazz squad. Mm-hmm. So that's got to be disconcerting if you're a Nuggets fan.
Yeah.
Jokic just showed up. The thing is, like, Jamal Murray being the second best player on that team, because in the first game he gives you 36, 5, and 9, really good outing. And then the next game, I believe he had 14 points, and he's just one of those guys. He did it in the playoffs last year, too. Yeah. He would go for these 30-plus games and then turn around the next game and just disappear, and you just can't have that. So the fact that he's a max guy based on his contract play is not
actually?
If we went down the list of guys in the league that are max guys, like Tobias Harris is one of the guys that comes to mind. I don't know if Al Horford's is technically a max contract, but he's getting like 20-plus. Anyway, so another series that is not really interesting on paper and is not going to be interesting is the Nets and the Raptors. The Raptors in the first game absolutely blew them out, as they should have. But the Nets made it competitive in the second game yesterday. And it came down to the wire. It came down to a final defensive stop from Toronto to put the Nets away. So they're up 2-0. There's not really a lot of worry there, not really a lot of intrigue. But the Nets have played hard. They've played well for their interim head coach. And since they've been down in the bubble, they have not just been an easy game as people, you know, going into the games against them would
expect. It doesn't help when you're missing your two stars. That one is rough for the Nets.
You know who I don't miss? Kyrie. I'm so glad that he has not been in the news cycle and that he's not been in Orlando. It's been a nice break.
For sure.
Yeah, in the worst way possible. Okay, a little Celtics talk for my Celtics.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, okay, so they're up 2-0. The first game was a little closer than I would have liked it to have been. The 76ers, they crept around the whole game. I mean, the Sixers did something smart because Ben Simmons was always going to be the primary defender on Jason Tatum, and he had given Tatum fits just as he has given everybody who he defends fits because he's one of the best defenders in the league. Obviously, they're without Ben Simmons, and so they have taken Matisse Thybulle, a rookie out of Washington who's played really well, can't hit anything, can't hit a shot to save his life, but is an elite defender already.
We have the Husky stuff up even. Wow, look at that. That's good timing.
Go Dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
Bow down. But anyway, so Tatum had his. He's had 30-plus in both the games so far. Kemba was not really a factor in the first game. They were able to defend him well, and he just wasn't hitting his shots. Jaylen Brown, I love that guy. He's the perfect wingman if Tatum is going to be the 1A. I guess that leaves Jaylen Brown as the 1B. But his defensive tenacity, his athletic ability, just his presence, I just feel like he's consistent. He's always there. He's locked in. Mm-hmm. And he's improved his three-point shooting so much that it's like I don't have anxiety when he hucks him up. However, I do have anxiety when Marcus Smart, you decide to take the offense into your own hands and make some just ridiculous plays. I love Marcus Smart just as much as I hate him. He's just one of those players. Yeah.
He is one of those players I could see.
He's one of the best defenders in the league and kind of got snubbed for consideration because they only consider bigs for defensive player of the year. But anyway, the 76ers basically have just quit. Joel is putting up numbers, but they're not exactly effective numbers. I mean, one of the Celtics' biggest problems all season has been their post defense, especially against big, talented guys, which Joel is. But, man, the 76ers can't even get an entry pass into Joel Embiid. And
he's getting
just,
frustrated.
He was getting frustrated. And they can't hit any of their shots either. And then you have your second best guy, like I mentioned, Tobias Harris, giving you like 12 and 10 points. And it's just like it's you're making work. 30-plus million a year. Yep. Ben Simmons is out. This is obviously your time to step to the plate and show why you're making this money. And you just are nowhere to be seen.
Yep.
It's just like you can't have that. And Philly, it seems like they all just want to get out of the bubble for good reason. Yeah. Move on from the season. Move on from Brett Brown. We've had two full years of the Brett Brown, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid experiment, and it is just not working. And there are so many people around the media that are just holding out for it, holding out for it. You know, if they can just get it right. It's like, just, no, it's hey, guess what?
Yeah. Eventually, the process isn't working.
Yeah, it's like having a toxic relationship that you just can't get out of just because you're like, well, you know, the first couple months, things were really good, and there have been like spurts of promise, and you know, it's just like, and actually, no, you have this whole 2 years to look at and be like, guess what? Actually, no, it's not working.
You have the ownership group like looking at the GM and looking at the team like, I can fix them. I can make them better than they are. And then all of a sudden it's like, you can't. You can't. You got to start from scratch. You got to tear it down and do it because it's just – it's not good.
Absolutely the worst. I want to save the Clippers and the Mavs.
Yeah.
But did you want to touch on any of the other
Blazers. Let's do the Blazers because – this is what happened in the Blazers Lakers game is exactly what some of the analysts were like, this could be bad for the Lakers, and it's exactly what we thought would happened. They, you know, Dame took control. He kept them, you know, on an even ground, and they never felt like they were losing that game. They were always in control. I think they frustrated LeBron, and you can really tell the Lakers are struggling without guard play. Really, I mean, really, really badly on the perimeter.
Yeah, I'll be the first to admit, I didn't completely buy into this Trailblazers upsetting the Lakers hype that a lot of the media
members have been talking about.
He also had them against the Warriors last year.
Yeah.
So, Charles is just in love with the Blazers for good reason. But anyway, just because in these playoff games, these seeding games, but really for Portland, they were playing into the playoffs.
Yep.
They just couldn't defend anybody.
Yeah.
And, like, even the poor teams that they were playing, they were absolutely – they couldn't stop anybody. And they weren't exactly trying to stop anybody either.
They just knew they had to outscore the other team.
Exactly. And so I heard a stat. I think Chuck mentioned it on Inside the NBA or NBA Tonight or whatever the show is called.
It's an awesome show. That's fine. You can mess up the name because we all know which one it is. That's probably one of the best
Ernie,
pre-game,
Kenny,
post-game,
Shaq,
halftime
Chuck,
show ever.
It's the best. Anyway, this in any win this season for the Trailblazers was the lowest scoring total that they put up. So they didn't even play that well. They did not shoot well as a team, as a collective. But they showed up on defense. They frustrated LA. And LA doesn't exactly have an offensive identity outside of LeBron and AD. But AD wasn't even making it an issue for the Blazers. He was just sitting at the top of the three-point line.
Yep.
He just wasn't asserting himself. It's just like, that's what you got to be doing.
Nurkic was kind of like all over him. Like
he was.
He felt like Davis just didn't seem like he had the gusto to go low and mess with Nurkic. And Nurkic isn't even that imposing. As you know, both the fact that he's a little bit bigger, he's not super athletic, he's not doesn't have super long arms, he's not a big block guy. And, you know, Whiteside is, and I get, you know, maybe not wanting to go down there with Whiteside.
Whiteside actually played pretty well. I mean, for as much flack as he catches, which is warranted, he's just a jackass. But he played well. He had five blocks, and it wasn't just stat padding blocks. They were actually effective, tied of the game, changing blocks. And that's the other thing. They don't even have Zach Collins healthy right now. So let's say AD starts to assert himself on the low block more and playing his game that the Lakers need from him to play. Yep. They have three huge bodies to rack up these fouls, to absorb these fouls from Davis. So I don't know. After that first game, I really do think the Lakers are in trouble. They can't get shooting from anybody.
No.
I mean, it was going so poorly, I was surprised that they didn't experiment a little bit more with Deion Waiters. He only played 1 minute.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But it's just like, surprising. Danny Green can't hit anything. KCP is hot trash.
Yep.
I think they need to start Kuzma. They got to try to get him touches and get him going early.
They need to get him going because he can score, but he was also terrible because, again, I don't think he needs to start, I think.
It's because you're rolling the dice bringing him off the bench, whether he's actually going to be engaged or not, or whether he's going to be on or not. So I totally agree. I think they got to start. What do you have to lose at this point?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It's scary, man.
It really is. I think the most interesting one left, because, you know, the Thunder Rockets, the Rockets should take care of business.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a dark horse push, especially with Westbrook being out for the Rockets, that the Thunder could steal some games. I mean, they're just an adult professional team.
Yeah.
And I think people have lost a little bit of appreciation for Chris Paul, as he's been in the smaller market, you know, but they got some players. I think they'll at least get a game or two. I think the Rockets should win. The other thing is, if the Rockets are hitting even just 40% from three, you're probably going to lose just with the volume of threes that they shoot.
Yeah, really,
and they shot lights out.
Yeah.
So probably safe Rockets winning the series there. The Magic and the Bucks.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's shocking. Most people had the Bucks taking the East and being the contender in the East, but they're struggling. Or struggled, I guess.
No, they have since they've gotten into the bubble, and this is one of the things when you talk about skepticism as it pertains to Milwaukee is, okay, in a 7-game series, are teams going to defend Giannis differently?
Mm-hmm.
It's different if it's a one game, you know, regular season, game in, game out basis. But when you're going back and forth against the same team and they have, you know, days in between to make adjustments and everything. And the Magic shot the lights out. You can't assume that the Magic are going to be able to shoot with that sort of efficiency. But Vucevic absolutely just eviscerated them. He was unconscious, which was really cool. Terrence Ross played really well. Bow down, Husky, shout out again. And Giannis didn't have bad numbers. I think he had like 37, 17, and 5 or something like that. But, man, they just...
They couldn't stop the Magic.
They couldn't stop the Magic. They didn't play defense at all. And they haven't played well since the bubble started either.
Yeah. They haven't been able to take control of games like they did earlier this year.
And they have too many people in their rotation. I don't know if they're using this series as an experiment to try to like refine their rotation.
Yeah.
But they're playing like 10 and 11 guys. Yeah. Like, you got to get it down to 8, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like 9 most. I mean, they just have too many bodies out there. And so I don't know if that's just because they're trying to figure it out for the long haul.
Mm-hmm.
But... yeah, they need to tighten it down. I mean, the Magic did this last year to Toronto. In Toronto, they took the first game and then ended up
collapsed,
getting... Yeah. So I don't think the Bucks are in serious trouble. Maybe long-term, this poses a couple problems, but I think they'll be fine ultimately in this series.
No, I think so as well. The Bucks are just too talented. Giannis is just on a different level than the rest of the NBA in terms of his athletic ability, his dominance. But yeah, they should definitely be fine.
Okay, so I don't really care to talk about the Heat and the Pacers. I think the Heat are going to win that series. The Pacers are going to fight every game and play good defense.
They should be good games, I think, but the Heat should ultimately take that.
Right, exactly. The Heat just have too much shooting with Hero and Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
They're so flexible, too, the lineups that they could put out there and the flexibility and the versatility that Bam provides them as well as their big – yeah, incredible. Anyway – okay, so I want to do a little bit of a hot route here, Vinny, you listening up. I want to incorporate my jabroni of the week before we start talking about the Dallas.
We'll tie this in then, yeah.
Okay, Dallas Clippers series. So, my jabroni of the week. Let's roll some footage.
So on the roll.
Can they hear me?
To me, that's clearly a foul. He's jumping point A to point B.
All right, so this was from game one, which Dallas was playing very well, came out very hot,
right now
and they were taking it to the Clippers.
Okay,
so
play.
You'll see that down. Porzingis Paul here George gets called for the foul,
Porzingis,
and he throws his fist.
Foul.
Boom. End of
and
his
– technical foul's been handed out.
He ended his argument quick, just in the spur of the moment where he's heated, understandably so. He pumps his fist once, and that's it. There's no continuation. Pretty clean.
It's a rough like a good block.
Clean block, understandably frustrated. He nicks him on the arm there a little bit,
right
but
That's a good block.
But look, okay, so he pumps his fist, and that was it. And so the rule is, by rule, anytime a player pumps their fist in argument, venting frustration about a call, it's an automatic technical. And so by rule, it was a good call, but I think you have to step back and look at the rule.
You got to look at the rules on that.
And especially as it applies to playoff basketball. I mean, they're playing well against a team that nobody expected them to have a chance against. And you make a good block like that, and you pump your fist once. It's not like he got up in the ref's face, and it's not like he had this long-winded argument. I mean, he ended it right there after he pumped his fist. And so that's technical one.
Now Carlo was,
and so it puts him in a spot that they'll show eventually at some point here, where he's in jeopardy of getting a second technical, which he does end up getting, and gets ejected from the game.
They need to look at the rules on that, because that's a brutal, brutal call to get. Like you said, the regular season, you know,
I'd run the same play.
But playoffs, where you're playing for not just your team, but some of these guys are needing to play well for contract purposes.
And so he's standing up for Lugo, which is what he should do. There's really not much there. There's a mutual shove back and forth both ways. It's brief. Again, nothing really comes from it. It's snuffed out right there. But they give him a double technical, both on Marcus Morris and Porzingis. And so with that second technical, he's out of the game. And so you can argue, and you should argue, that knowing that Porzingis had that first technical, whether it was actually warranted or not,
for an ejection,
that you have to be a little bit more mindful of that and not get up in a physical altercation. So that part he should be held accountable for. But that changed the tide of the game. It absolutely did. Ever since KP left the game, Mavs were just flat.
That was with 9 minutes left in the third quarter. I mean, there's a lot of game left.
And the Mavs just, it took the wind out of their sails. And because of the fact that the Mavericks won their second game last night, which was an impressive showing, and they absolutely
they
stunted.
Took it too. Yep.
They could easily be up 2-0. This could be a very different series if it weren't for KP's ejection. Yep. So that'll go down in the history books, depending on how this series really a pivotal moment. But Dallas has showed up.
They really have. And Luka is a guy who I've obviously known about. You hear his name everywhere. But I've really started to watch his game.
It's incredible.
But what the craziest part is, it's not like – he's not like a LeBron James or a Giannis where he's like, he makes your jaw drop. It's more like, oh my, he has, 26 points now? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, that's because he's so smooth, and he makes things look so easy. And it's an easy that, again, it's different than a LeBron James easy. You know, LeBron will jump over you, run you over, and you can tell that this guy is the best player in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Luka, it's like all of a sudden you're like, you go back and you look and you're like, wow, that was really, really good. And you just have no idea how he can do it because he's a young kid who has played at the international level for years and who, coming into the league, no one was really sure what kind of player they were going to get.
He has deceiving strength, too. I mean, you see him casually drive to the basket against Kawhi and just get enough of a shoulder, enough of an elbow to create separation and then fall back and have the touch on it to kiss it off the glass. And it's like, he's doing that against one of, if not the best defenders in the league.
Yep.
And it's just like, that's not easy, but he makes it look so easy. Another thing, his passing is just otherworldly. I mean, I think Seth Curry was on Ryan Russillo's pod, and they were kind of talking about how Seth had to adjust to knowing when he was open, because he would be standing there idle, thinking there's no way in hell
the ball's ever going to get to me.
And yeah, so his teammates have had to adjust just because he can make passes that I would say nobody else in the league
can. Patrick Mahomes effect.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, exactly. And good course correction from Luka between the first game and the second game. Both games he played well, but he had 10 turnovers. Yeah. A lot of those came early in that game one. Only one turnover last night.
Wow.
And he's awesome. And if he can make this a series or even beat the Clippers, who are one of the perennial favorites. A lot of star power. I think it's going to do wonders for, you know, his career and how we see him. Because we already see him now as one of, like, he's got to be a top five guy or a fringe top five guy
at
this
point. At least in the argument. And what's crazy is I think his stats and what he does for his team is definitely top five. But kind of what we talked about, how it's surprising his level of play, the numbers he puts up, he's a guy who definitely should be recognized as that, and who hopefully after this will get that recognition, because he should be in the MVP discussion.
He should be
moving forward because he's a stud.
He definitely should be. One thing, as you were mentioning, you know, that he's a young guy in this league, but he's played overseas and everything. I was watching as he had the post-game interview last night, and it's just so obvious that he's not entirely comfortable with, like, the American media and the American press yet. Because there was some stat, I forget what it was, but basically it linked him to, I believe it was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, as the only players do this, like, within your first two playoff games.
Yep.
And they're like, what does that mean to you? And he's smiling. You can tell, like, he's elated to be even put in the conversation. And he's just like, we got the win. We win. We knew we come out here, play hard, and we win. But you can tell on his face that he's like, holy shit.
Kareem
Abdul-Jabbar. This is awesome. So it's interesting to watch him interact with the media. And obviously he's young, and he's going to get a lot more exposure, especially being the type of player that he is. We're going to see him in a lot of post-game interviews. He's going to get the reps, and he's going to become a lot more comfortable. But I just thought it was an interesting observation. Kristaps actually had a similar thing when he was taking responsibility for his negligence of just going up and getting into that altercation to get ejected from the game. He was saying it with, like, a sly smile on his face, and it's like, okay, do you actually believe, like, what you're saying, or are you just doing this to appease the masses and everything? But yeah, just an interesting observation. But that is a fascinating series. It really could even be more so if the first game played out differently.
So who specifically was the jabroni? Was it the NBA?
The ref was a jabroni. I think, as the emotions and the intensity and the stakes of the playoffs increase, I think the refs have to be able to take more, too. I think they have to be able to let a little bit more go. I can understand that they kind of want to get out in front of it before things get crazy. But
again, you have to allow a little bit because, first off, again, like we were talking about with baseball, fans like seeing that sort of stuff. They like seeing players come face to face. They like seeing players kind of shove each other a little bit. Now, does that, you know, you said about escalating that. I don't think people are going to throw – I don't think there's any guys in the league right now. Okay, there might be.
There's no Steven Jackson. There's no Ron Artest.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody's going to throw a punch.
Charles Oakley.
Or jump into the stands and go – well, there's no fans, too.
There's no fans in the stands.
Just start attacking the hologram people.
There's no liability anymore.
There is. They should – yeah, so that you're right. The referees are jabronis. NBA refs are jabronis.
Yeah, so that was my jabroni of the week was that ref, just because of the ramifications that it had on that game and furthermore on the series. But – really good basketball just through the first 3 days of the playoffs, and it feels like playoff basketball, even though the optics of it without the fans and the home teams and everything, without that being there, the intensity among the players, it's real for them. You can feel it. It's visceral, and it's been awesome, and I can only imagine how much better it's going to get. Yeah. Really impressive showing. One thing to watch for, though, obviously home court advantage and, like, your number of seeding really doesn't matter, but the refs, I think, are a little bit more objective and less inclined to get swayed into a call based on the fans. Mm-hmm. And I think we've already seen a number of calls that may not have taken place had they been in, who knows, Boston for game one or, you know,
or even in Dallas.
Environment.
If
they were
in Dallas for game one, are they calling that tech?
I mean, they would have been in L.A. because Dallas is the lower seed. But no, to your point and my point, no, up yours, dude.
You're an idiot.
But something to watch, because I think calls will just be – they aren't going to play out the same as they typically would have you had those massive fan bases, imposing their will onto the refs. But – awesome basketball. I can't wait. Fun. And it's going to be nonstop. I mean, the Heat and the Pacers are playing right now. Yeah, exactly. It's like I don't have to wonder or wait for my basketball fix. It's going to be here for the next 2.5-3 months. Yeah. So awesome stuff.
No, it is awesome. So we'll go to my jabroni of the week. Mine's completely different. Mine technically is playoffs, I guess. So we'll start it off with it was a Manchester City, my European soccer team, playing in the UEFA Champions League. Quarterfinal game against Lyon, who's a French team who, midway through the season inside of the French league, they were bottom of their table, bottom of the standings. But they made it to the quarterfinals by beating Juventus in the knockout stage right before this, which has Cristiano Ronaldo. Essentially, what happens is, I'll let you watch, but Raheem Sterling, one of the best players in the world, has one of the largest misses you could ever possibly see. Right now, the game's 2-1. Lyon, it's 85th, 86th minute. City needs a goal here. And Gabriel Jesus gets it here on the outside. The Brazilian striker sends a beautiful ball and absolutely shanks it.
How do you not get your foot
this over is that. One of the world-class players. Raheem Sterling makes tens of millions of dollars a year. This, I mean, a perfect ball.
How do you not get your foot over that? You can see it in his form. You can see it before he even hits the ball.
Yep. I'd like to excuse him. Oh, there goes poor Pep Guardiola. It came up a little bit at the last
moment. Just make the safe touch. Don't make it a
even the goalie's like, dude, thanks. Like, we very much appreciate what you just did here. And that lost him the game. That was a – and then Leon scored like a minute after that, and it was over. So – that is my Jabroni of the Week. I love Raheem Sterling. He's a guy who has just been torched out his entire career. He started off at Liverpool, has been playing in English leagues his entire career, but he's hated.
That hurts.
He plays for the English national team, but over the last 2 years, he's really come on. He had over 30 goals across all competitions this year, which is one of the best in Europe. And that, I mean, I was watching that on my phone out at Dover Bay on the Pendere River, and that almost made me cry. I almost started crying while I was having my lunch.
That's gut-wrenching. That really is.
And the city has dumped hundreds of millions of dollars into this program, into Manchester City, to try and get them. They've never won the Champions League. They've had a lot of domestic success, but they have never won the UEFA Champions League, which is considered the top trophy in Europe, because it does bring teams like Manchester City, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Messi, Ronaldo, PSG, some of the top leagues, top teams all come together, and City just can't do anything about it. And if that doesn't explain or show you the sort of luck and sort of issues Manchester City have on the Champions League stage, I don't know what else does. So Raheem Sterling is my Jabroni of the Week.
I'd feel bad for you as a fan. I would pity you a little bit, but you have the Mariners. So I can't feel too bad.
Well, I mean, there's just heartbreak after heartbreak after heartbreak. I have the Seahawks not beating the Niners by an inch. I have the Seahawks not beating the Patriots by a yard. I have Manchester City missing an absolutely perfectly set up ball. I have the Sonics gone. The Sounders got knocked out. And, I mean, I've had a lot of losses over the last couple months.
But you do have the only consistent ongoing sports talk show in Spokane. So
the Locker Room.
Your hat.
I've had a different jersey every single week. You can go back and watch. You didn't believe me.
I guess I didn't. I thought you had repeats. I really did.
No, not
really
a chance. Didn't. Not going to happen for a couple more weeks. I have a Shock jersey coming into the mix.
Thank God.
I have a Chiefs jersey coming into the mix.
Lord knows we need more Shock content.
Oh, you need way more. We have our big guy, Adam Shackelford, right there.
Before we start spewing more nonsense and get off track, my closing was your Jabroni of the week. We haven't even gotten to closing time. Sorry.
This is closing time. No, that was my Jabroni is done.
Should I sing closing time again?
No, definitely.
I'll spare
not.
Your ears. Thank anyway, you. My closing ears. Time, as we've kind of talked about, ESPN, there's been a lot of overhaul. There's been a lot of shift with personnel in shows, whether studio shows or the radio shows, which all started this past week with Max Kellerman getting on air and Greeny, and then Zubin, Jay Will, and Keyshawn Johnson.
Oh, God.
But they have finally, ESPN for Monday night, solidified and found their team after much criticism over the past 2 years.
Warranted criticism.
They've got their team, and I think two-thirds of this team is awesome, and I'm actually excited about it. So they went with Steve Levy.
Stud.
Absolutely. Brian Griese. I don't really have strong feelings for or against Brian Griese.
I also don't know. I mean, he's one of their top college announcers, so I would assume he's good, but ESPN has let me down before.
Exactly.
A lot.
I know I've heard him call games before, but if he were calling a game, I wouldn't even be able to like pick out his voice and be like, oh, that's Brian Griese.
That's Brian Griese. He's a stud, too.
So that one's kind of a wash for me. Like, I don't really care. But Lewis Riddick was the one that I wanted to get in the booth.
Yep.
Obviously, he hasn't had a ton of experience like Brian has had years of, which I can understand that, but he's going to be filling that, I assume, that Booger McFarland role.
He's so much better.
Lewis Riddick's one of the better talents at ESPN, and I'm glad he's kind of ascending the ranks, because I think he deserves it. I think he's one of the more intelligent listens. He's very eloquent when he speaks. Yeah.
I mean, he's
and
not
a former
just,
player as well. Yeah, he has a lot of every things that he can level. Tap into and really provide good knowledge for the listener and the viewer. So I think ESPN did pretty well. I really do. I love Steve Levy. He's always been one of the OG SportsCenter anchors. He's always been really good in everything that he does. He's got that perfect voice.
Yep.
He's just been a consummate professional. And his broadcasting time for football got cut short because he was the XFL broadcaster for ESPN, the lead guy. And, of course, the league had to fold over in wake of the coronavirus. So getting another crack on it at it and on America's biggest stage, maybe formerly biggest stage, Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
But either way, I think ESPN rolled out a pretty impressive – I'm happy with the team that they rolled out.
Better than
Jason Witten and, like, Sean McDonough.
God.
Tough.
They haven't had a good team in probably 5 years.
Or like Joe Tessitore just getting way too excited about some third-string running back having a one-yard touchdown.
Yeah. Whoa! After they're down by like 25.
It was like the Eagles, and I don't know if it was like Brian Scott or someone like that. He's like, Brian Scott for 1 yard! And it's like, okay, I think like, they're still down two scores? Yeah.
All right, okay. Different channel. I'm going to go anywhere else other than listening
to
you, Tessitore.
Take it easy, Joe.
Take it easy, Joey.
So what's
no,
up?
No, that's awesome. So essentially mine, and I'll make mine a little bit shorter.
Yeah, sorry.
No, yeah, dude. Just you took up all my time. Now that's we have a, to –
there's
just,
good stuff to talk about today, man. I'm stoked. I'm rolling.
You're 100% right, and that kind of fades into what I'm talking about. Sports are back. Sports make me happy. This is my closing time. I'm a happy guy. Now, does that mean that I'm thrilled because I have no NBA team, like I said, and all the other complaints I said? Yeah, I've had a lot of losses here recently, but – sports are back. You have the NBA. You have the NHL. You have the MLS starting tonight.
Mm-hmm.
You have the NFL starting in just a couple weeks. I mean, we're finally getting back to this point of normalcy in the mm-hmm. sports world, and that makes me happy. That makes people happy. And it goes back to this whole thing that when people say, oh, sports don't matter. Sports are sports. You know, I can't believe that you cry, you
You hinge your happiness upon something that you can't control.
And you can't control. And it's like, well, okay, like you can go screw yourself. Like, I don't need to hear your sort of negativity.
Yeah,
in
my ex-girlfriend could not wrap her mind around the concept. And I was like, you know what? That's fair. But I'm just going to have
like,
a more exciting life.
And it's like, pack your bags.
Pack your bags.
See ya. See you later. I don't need you. You said X, right?
X.
Okay. Yeah. My current
little Doris Burke drop there, yeah.
Get out of here. We don't need you.
Anyway.
So it's 100% true, and it's not just sports in terms of, you know, when you kind of go back to that. Well, why do you even care? It's like, well, people like movies, people like music, people like to draw, people like to watch Bob Ross paint portraits of things, and it's like that makes you happy. Let me have my thing. You know, let me have the one thing that actually is exciting and consistently changing. You know, movies are great, TV shows are great, but they're scripted.
Mm-hmm.
And you know it's... You can't script sports. You can
unless
plan...
Unless it's the 1920 World Series or something.
Yeah, unless it's something where you already know what's going to happen. But, you know, it's fun watching guys like Damian Lillard, Fernando Tatis, Kyle Lewis. It's watching young guys grow and see their dreams come to fruition in front of millions of eyes is just awesome.
And you get
to
watch them grow up as professionals,
yep.
too, especially when they start at such a young age. And then because Lillard's already been in the league for like 7 or 8 years
yeah,
or something, which is crazy.
It.
Exactly.
Yep.
But it's like, I don't know, it's incredible to watch the maturation and the growth of these yep. guys because so many of them do it well, and so many do it well from a young age. It's like, I'm 23, and yep. there are some of the 23-year-olds out there that are handling,
yeah.
you know, the media and some of the press obligations yep. that they have, and it's like,
I don't.
I would have a slip of the tongue, and I would probably be canceled just like that.
Just
so,
like Tom
hey,
Brenneman.
I'll just go
Tom Brenneman all over the media.
I'll just have a sports show instead where I have a little bit more of a
editorial
leash.
Freedom.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, so it's nice to see sports are a welcome distraction to the world that we live in and will continue to be here. I think the millions of dollars that are in sports is completely worth it because it gives brands perfect opportunities to sell their product. It gives teams the opportunity to sell their product. It gives people the opportunity to sell their own talents and not not their bodies, even though it kind of is.
And it provides a sense of community within the yeah. fan bases of respective teams, obviously, but at large within the world of sports or within the world of a particular sport league.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much there. There's so much unity. There's so much adversity, which is good.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And to have those ridiculous Twitter beefs that honestly have no effect on anything.
Yeah.
But you know what? You just get mad and you have them. And it's just like, that's where it lies,
you
right
said,
there.
You brought up a really good point. So you bring up this whole community aspect. And I think people are terrible drivers, and this will connect here at the end. I think people
Sick.
Are terrible drivers. I will give people one pass if they do something stupid, if they have a decal or a license
nice.
Plate that is a Seahawk,
nice.
A Mariner, whatever. It's like, okay, you get your one pass, you idiot. You're lucky I like you for one thing, and that's the reason why.
See, I look at that the other way. I'm like, ah, I hate being associated with you. Like,
and I see that. So I give them one pass, and if they do it again, I'm like, you got to get out of our fan base. Like, you got to get out of it. I can't have you
can't do it.
Surrounding me. So I give them one pass. I understand your take there. But you're wrong.
But no, that's a nice little touch because I do think that there are a lot of people out there that don't exactly understand the importance of sports and why people get so wrapped up in it and so emotionally charged about it and devote their lives and their careers and their free time and their leisure time around it. But you know what? If you don't understand, you're probably not ever going to understand. And we're probably not going to convince you otherwise of what you already think. So that is that.
And you are our jabroni of all time.
Jabroni of all time. We're going to have an all-time list of jabronis at some point.
If you're watching us right now and you've watched us for a good amount of time and you can come back at us saying you don't care about sports, stop watching us. We don't want jabronis like you watching us.
And there you go. We absolutely have no fan base.
And now we have no fan base because the only people who watched us didn't care about sports. It's just our
moms. Be sure to like, rate, subscribe.
We really want you to listen, I guess. But, yeah, so this was an awesome show. Again,
I think so, too.
We'll have plenty more content coming through. We have some other plans coming down the pipeline as soon as you know the NFL gets back. That's going to give us plenty of stuff as usual. But keep an eye out on what we're doing, our Facebook page, our personal Twitters, which you'll see here in a second. But thanks for stopping by. We've had a good time with you. We'll see you again next week. Same time, same place. I think, what does PTI say? You knuckleheads. I hate
knuckleheads.
That. It makes me
Canadian
a little uncomfortable.
Flag.
But PTI kills it every time.
They
so,
do.
Thank
Here's
you.
A little Russillo flex for a send-off. Boom. Later. Thanks for watching The Locker Room on Spokane Talks. Check us out on Facebook as well as our other platforms. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation by emailing us at info@SpokaneTalksOnline.com. And for more sports news, opinions, and content, follow Justin and me on Twitter.